You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Welcome back, Roto Experts in the Morning. I'm George Kurtz here with Matt Modica, right? Is that how we decided your name is going to be pronounced, Matt Modica?
Yes, Modica is correct. The other pronunciation is actually Modica. The real way, but Modica is correct.
Oh, well, you got to be different. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
It just got Americanized, I guess, down the line.
Americanized. Oh. Mike Blewett will be back shortly. For those who listen to the show, Matt seems to disappear 2 hours into every show. You know, he has to take care of some business, you might say, here at Rockin' Riley's. So Mike will be back with us shortly. He's advised me to continue talking about this auction. Screw you, Mike. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. All right? It's my show now. I'll talk about whatever I want to talk about.
Sounds like
Matt, yeah, it is a... Matt, I believe you're a Met fan, right?
That is correct.
Okay, well, good for you. Mike and I are Yankee fans here. So let me ask you first, what is your favorite type of league to play in?
I prefer the 15-team. I prefer the mixed. And I just think a 15-team league is great because you are going to have a deficiency at some position. You're not going to walk out of a 15-team draft or a 15-team auction and have a solid team everywhere. You're going to have to sacrifice something. You're going to have to know that coming in or throughout your draft, saying whether it's corner, your outfield might be a little weak, and then that's where you have to be on top of the game when it comes to fab.
I agree. If you're in a 15-team league and you feel your team has no weaknesses after a draft, you either drafted a fantastic team or completely unrealistic, because that's the way it works with 15-team leagues. I prefer 12 teams mixed. That's just probably what I'm used to. Although now in expert leagues, now we seem to all be going to 15 teams. I don't know why that is, why we changed. Maybe there's more of us around. Maybe that's the reason why.
I think also the transition to the 15 teams is that's the NFBC format, and we're pretty much following their ADP as well. And that's how I've made that transition. I used to be the 12 teams, and now I've gone to the 15s. So that's my take.
Yeah, I'd never care. As long as I know what the rules are, I don't care. I'll play in just about anything head-to-head. I kind of like head-to-head. I think that's fun, although generally I'll probably only be involved in one head-to-head. Total points, same thing, I'll be involved in one. Most of my leagues are going to be 12 or 15-team mixed, which is, I guess, where my wheelhouse is. So do you have any other live drafts coming up, Matt?
I have another auction next Sunday. That's the big preseason auction that we'll be doing on March 5th. This one was like the little warm-up one. Like you've seen KJ Duke punting power in this one. I only paid like $90 on pitching. My pitching is usually a hell of a lot stronger than this one. So, you know, you got to change things up too. You don't want to draft every team or auction every team the same. I mean, I did that in fantasy football with Sammy Watkins, and that wasn't too good.
Oh, didn't we have Corey crying about Sammy Watkins? Did you listen to Old School Fantasy yesterday?
No, I did miss it.
Oh, my God.
Was he crying?
Well, first of all, you're fired.
Because I was crying, too.
They were doing a... he had a segment on about players that have disappointed you or upset you. And he went on... I mean, it was fantastic, actually. But he went on like a 6-7 minute little, I dated Watkins. I loved him so much. This sort of thing. And it was hilarious. It really... He did a great job. I don't know if he ad-libbed this or if he actually wrote this out, but it was a very good job by Corey. So congratulations to the fantasy executive. But it was that sort of thing about, I guess, the player disappointed you much. And let me ask you, an experienced player, do you do that? Is there a player that has upset you so much that you automatically, or players for that matter, that you automatically will never draft them again?
That is something I try not to do. I don't think a player should ever be dead to you. Sammy Watkins, I pretty much took him NFBC weekend in New York City, second round of like every draft. I did get the highest point total in my primetime league and was able to prevail in that one, even with him as a second round pick. but I still love the guy's talent. And he should take a nice discount next year. And if that happens, I'm going to buy him again.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. There should never be a player that's dead to you. Just like I'm a Yankee fan. That doesn't mean I should be not drafting any Red Sox players because I hate the Red Sox. Or if you're a Met fan, you can't draft. Who do you guys hate? The Braves?
I don't even know who we hate.
Whatever.
We just want to win.
you can't draft that way. That's the bottom line. You just can't draft that way where you need to separate your fandom from your fantasy team. It's the only way you're truly going to.
Yeah, if you have a problem with that, like you said, like if you're a Yankee fan and you won't draft Red Sox, then you should be playing in NL only leagues. That's the perfect format for you. You don't have to worry about.
Didn't even think about that.
You know, you don't have to worry about Red Sox, Blue Jays, anything like that.
That's actually a very great solution there. Only leagues, I'm not a fan of them. I did have to play in one. Scott Engel had wanted me to play in one, but thankfully I finally got out of that. It's hard when you suffer injuries in only leagues. There's just no one else to grab.
Yeah, no, that is.
Is Mike?
I'm here. Yes. Yeah, I'm here. I'm just
Mike's
listening.
Alive.
I'm listening.
You're
in.
Lucky, Mike. If you had gone 10 more seconds, Mike, I was going to hockey.
I would have won. The Ranger game the other night was awesome. Actually, the last two games.
I did not want
trade deadline on Wednesday. Trade deadline.
The hockey trade deadline, since we're talking about it, I'll give you your opportunity to talk about it. The hockey trade deadline is normally just nuts, right? Because it's later in the season, obviously, and teams can really accurately depict whether or not they're in or they're out, right? So the hockey trade deadline, despite me not knowing what the ramifications are necessarily, it's just kind of fun to see the amount of deals that can tend to happen at the trade deadline. Yes, George?
Well, it may not be as fun this year. As you sort of hinted, there are only right now truly two teams not in the playoff hunt, and that's Colorado and Arizona. And Arizona has nothing to deal. Nothing major anyway. Radim Vrbata, Shane Doan. All right, they're top nine forwards. Nothing that's going to be the top of a trade. Colorado does have players to deal. Matt Duchene, Gabriel Landeskog. Poor Matt's dying. We start talking about hockey, and Matt's
no, that
joking.
Was me. That was me. Sorry.
I'm a hockey fan, George.
Yeah, I'm working it out. Shane Doan was still in the league. He's 40.
he's
22,
Mr. Coyote.
I think exactly he is.
He is Mr. Coyote.
But he's finally said that he's willing to be that he'll go to a contender, mainly because the Coyotes suck, and Doan's career is on its end here. But he's not coming back a major piece there. Matt Duchene, Gabriel Landeskog, Joe Sakic, the GM of the Avalanche, knows. He holds all the cards here. No one else is offering top players. He is. But he wants your firstborn, your secondborn, and pretty much your retirement savings account, too. I don't know if he's going to get that. And he made it with someone like Matt Duchene, who is more than a rental player, someone who you can build your team around. He may be better off waiting until the offseason to make that deal, to where all teams can get involved, not just the contending teams this year. And after that, guys, are other teams going to fall out of it between now and Wednesday, where they'll trade out? You know, I think we'll see plenty of deals, but you may not see fantasy player deals, you know, guys who are in fantasy leagues. And that may be a problem. We may not be seeing a lot of those. Just, you know, little deals here, not the big headline deals that we're all looking forward to.
Yeah, hockey's the one sport. It's my favorite to play. I've been playing since I was like 7, 8. But it's the one sport that I've kept pure. That I've never played fantasy hockey. I get to root for my Rangers. I don't have to worry about, you know, I need this guy to score, this to happen. So
just takes one. Just dip that toe in the water,
yeah,
Matt, and then you're done.
Eventually, I have to get involved, but
George,
I do play hockey.
So how are you doing? I know you had a bail in one league, right? You had a
my home league. All of my home leagues are they're keeper leagues. We trade draft picks. I won it last year, but I had to trade a couple of draft picks in order to do it. I'll never draft Corey Perry again. A bastard first round pick has killed me this year. And it didn't work out for me. So, yes, I traded out, got a second round pick for some players, but I'm done.
So, on that front, because Joe Sakic is obviously, you know, a legendary NHL player, now that his team is horrific that he's running, currently sitting at 35 points, to give you some idea, they are last in the division with Minnesota more than doubling up their point total with 84 points currently in the standings. But how long has he been running the Rockies, and is he at risk? I mean, he's such a legendary player. It's not like people are going to be job poaching on Joe Sakic, but how long has he been running the Rockies, and how did he run them to this point where they're by far in last place?
Okay, first of all, it's the Avalanche baseball guy.
What did I say?
I said Rockies.
The Rockies.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, they were the Colorado Rockies back in the 80s when there was an NHL team there. But
is that where you're going with this? Yeah.
I had a save.
That was a good save.
I did know that.
That was a very good save.
I did know that.
That was a good save.
I'm sorry. We were talking baseball. I'm sorry. I made the transition. My bad. The Avs. So nobody's going to be poaching his job, but how did they get to this point?
Well, this season was, I guess you could say, it was going to be a disaster when they fired their coach, or he left late in like August. Patrick Roy, another legendary goaltender, Hall of Famer, he was the coach of the team, and then it just wasn't working out. Him and the Sakic, I guess they had differences of opinions on how to run the team, so he left in August. And by then, you know, by that's like leaving in baseball pretty much in January. You know, every team has already filled their coaching staff, so you're not getting the head coach you want. You can't get a top assistant because they already have a job, and no one's letting you talk to those players, to talk to those coaches at that time. So they had to settle for the next best pretty much within their organization. So they were already behind the eight ball there. Now, this was not really a great team to begin with, but I mentioned they have players. I mean, you got Duchesne, you got Landeskog, Nathan MacKinnon, you know, you got Barry on defense, Semyon Varlamov, who has the groin from hell. He's had groin injuries for the past couple of years. They just can't stay healthy. But a decent goaltender. What I'm trying to say is this is not a last place team. Just hasn't worked out this year. But if they trade Duchesne and Landeskog, depending on what they get back, boy, I don't know if they're going to get any better next year. Unless they go heavy into the free agent market here, you're trading 50, 60 goals away, which you can't do in today's NHL unless you're getting major talent back. So this is why Joe Sakic has to make a killing with these trades. He can't just settle for the best offer. If that comes along, then you got to keep these players. You have no choice there. So it's going to be interesting to see what Sakic does here. The Patrick Roy situation with the head coach, probably not his fault. Just situational, bad timing there. But these trades, that's all his fault. The Avalanche have traded a lot of talent, or let a lot of talent walk away. Ryan O'Reilly's on Buffalo. Stastny's on St. Louis. You know, these are guys they let go. Well, they traded away because these players either didn't perform great with them or had problems with the coach, general manager. You keep letting talent walk, you're seeing what happens here. You fall down to the bottom of the standings real quick.
Yeah, no, I've been really excited about watching the Rangers this season. What do you have in mind for them at the trade deadline, George? Anything you're expecting that they're going to make a major move, or just maybe tweak, try and get maybe that one solid forward, maybe not a tough guy, but somebody that's a little more physical?
Everybody's going to want a physical forward. I mean, there aren't too many Milan Lucic out there, Matt Martins, guys like that, because in today's NHL, for a tough forward, you need to be able to play. You know, this is not the NHL of the 70s and 80s. We used to have goons out there who would just fight and do the only thing. Fighting's down, but you still want someone out there to protect your players. Someone out there that teams have to be afraid of here. That being said, the Rangers are loaded at forward. Zuccarello, Nash, Stepan, Zibanejad, Vesey, Kreider. Grabner's having a fantastic season. Kevin Hayes, JT Miller. So they don't need a forward. It'd be a luxury. I expect the Rangers to go heavy after a defenseman. Everyone's talking about Kevin Shattenkirk going to St. Louis. Where is he going to go? Now we're finding out over the past week that Shattenkirk, who's the number one defenseman on the market because he'll be a free agent at the end of the year, and the Blues more than likely can't afford him. The problem is Shattenkirk has turned down two deals over the past 3-4 months. One deal was to Edmonton. One deal was to Tampa Bay. And when I say he's turned them down is these deals were contingent on him signing a contract extension. He wouldn't do it, which lets you know he's a free agent. He may want he wants to be a free agent. He wants to choose his own destination, or B, he has a team in mind that he wants to go to. And a lot of people are speculating that team is the Rangers. So the Rangers are going to have an interesting decision to make here. Shattenkirk would help them immensely. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He's one of the better defensemen in the league. Not a great defenseman, but he's one of the better ones and is having a fantastic season. But do the Rangers want to give up what it's going to take to acquire him now? Or if they believe Shattenkirk wants to play for them, do they just want to say, you know, we're pretty good this season, might be able to do some damage in the playoffs without him, and then sign him at the end of the season, but not have to give up any picks or players to get him.
But George, to your point, they might be able to trade from a strength like forward. It would be a difficult debate. Can they make noise in the playoffs this year, or do they just wait on a guy that they feel like they can get anyway?
I think the Rangers have to make that move. They've been close these last few years. Shattenkirk's the guy. I totally agree with you, George. I don't want to blow up the team, but if there's some kids that they're into and we could trade one of the guys we have that's kind of a luxury, then I think we have to do it.
I would agree. I think if it comes out to the Rangers, if they think Shattenkirk's the final piece, that he can help them overcome Washington and Pittsburgh, because that's your competition there,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you do the deal. If not, then I think you wait. I think that's a decision the Rangers GM has to make. Will Shattenkirk put you over the top, or at least make you even with those two teams? I don't think he does. I don't think the Rangers can beat either one of Washington or Pittsburgh, even with Shattenkirk. If I'm the Rangers, I'd probably play it more safe. If you think Shattenkirk wants to come to you, I'm waiting until June. Once he hits free agency, this way I don't have to give up that player and do all those draft picks. Keep in mind, you also got to fit Shattenkirk under the cap. That won't be easy either with the trade.
Yeah, that's interesting kind of debate, interesting organizational decision that they'll have to make here in the next few days. So we'll be back to talk a little bit more about whatever we want to talk about. We've talked MLB. We've talked hockey. Maybe we'll work in a hockey segment every week. Who knows? So Mike, George, and Matt back after this. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. We're on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network until 10 o'clock, and coming up after the show, we get the Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina, Mike Florio, and Frank Stanfill. After that, Fantasy Basketball Weekly with Mike Florio and Frank Stanfill. The father and son Fantasy NASCAR Hour. I saw these gentlemen yesterday taping this show, Scott and Sean Engel. As well as Rusty's Fantasy. That's with Scott Engel and Rusty Ryle in this league with Chris Welsh and Scott Bogman. We'll play after that. Then the Pat Mayo Hour, followed by Next Week in Fantasy with Greg Sussman and Corey Parson. High Stakes Fantasy Football with Eric Balkman and Dave Gerzak. Fantasy Hall of Fame Hour with Scott Engel. The Fantasy Footballers with Andy Holloway, Mike Wright, and Jason Moore. And then Out of Bounds, sponsored by SportsGrid.com with Mike Cardano and friends. I believe it was Mike Cardano, Corey Parson, and Tony Sincotta last night. I listened to a little bit of that last night. They always have some interesting topics. They talked a little bit about Scott Mercero, the former Jet. I believe he got into a scuffle in his neighborhood. I think some kid messed with his house or rang his doorbell, and Mercero hunted him down and assaulted the kid, apparently. That's what he's accused of. Punched him in the face. The kid was 15.
Don't ring and run at his house.
That's exactly right. You don't ring and run at anybody's house. Certainly don't do it to the retired defensive lineman. So I heard them talking about that. I don't know if you have any particular thoughts. I think Cardano was trying to get a reaction out of anybody, and they basically said the same thing that you said, George. And then Tony was like, Tony Sincotta, who obviously is willing to take a side and go with it, was like, well, you can't just go around punching 15-year-olds in the face. Obviously not a plan to success, and it's going to be something that puts you in the news. So I heard them talking about that a little bit last night, but that and more topics on Out of Bounds a little bit later today. So a full slate of shows, and we get replayed at the end of the day. We will be here tomorrow as well. George and I will be here tomorrow as well, as well as plenty of other shows we'll talk about tomorrow. So
hey, it's my pick of that. It's my pick in the Roto Experts.
All right, let's go. So what are you looking at?
All right, I could take a catcher. Brian McCann and Salvador Perez are available. We're in round 13 here. I'm a little short on power. You know, I have a lot of good 18 to 20 home run guys, but I only have one guy who has I took Miguel Sano last round because I needed power. Duvall's staring at me. Mazzara's there. Brantley. Those are the three top outfielders. I could go for my second closer in Robertson or a starting pitcher, which would be my sixth. And Julio Urias or Sonny Gray. Anybody?
Not Adam Duvall fan.
You don't want the second closer?
I do not like Duvall.
What about the second closer?
Robertson.
But does he get moved?
Yes, that's the question. He's going to get moved. I don't think there's any question.
He'll be
about
a closer
that.
On a team he's moved to. Not worried about that.
Okay. But what if? But see, if he goes to Washington, he should get the. He should be the closer there. I totally agree with that. But say they keep him a little while, and he's a setup guy somewhere. Like some team wants to just solidify their bullpen. I don't know. I don't know. That's my question.
The White Sox did that, like the Indians did it last year, right?
The White Sox will be selling it at some point. So,
Matt's talking. He's traded around the deadline. Yes, that'd be the danger. He could be the Andrew Miller or that we saw from last year. The big time. What the Indians are doing? The big time setup guy going with the Yankees bullpen.
Yeah.
So, George, like you mentioned before about the setup guys, I might pass on Robertson here, take Nate Jones later on. You know. In the draft, because I think Nate Jones
I'm not worried about that.
Has got the great skills.
I got to make a pick now. Now! I'm worried about now!
You said Michael Brantley. Michael Brantley was a guy we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I can wait on him. I can wait.
If you're going to go catcher, I'd go Perez. If I was going to go with the catcher. I mean, Sal Perez give you a 250, nothing great, but he should hit you 20 home runs.
He'll hit 20 home runs, you know. All right, fine. I'll take a catcher.
I cannot believe it. Of all the things that we just talked about, you're going in on a catcher. What round is it?
13. So this is about all when I'll take my first catcher.
Okay. Yeah, I think Sal Perez in this range, like I said, he's not flashy. Sometimes tanks, falls apart more in the second half due to his workload and stuff. But numbers are there. He's going to play every day. So why not?
If you're a Sal Perez, just irrespective of fantasy, would you be obviously you're a player, you like to get out there every day, but given the fact that you're a catcher, would you have any misgivings about the fact that you're played so much and that it's possibly shortening your career?
No, well, Kansas City did an honorable thing, I think it was before last season. They redid his contract. They had like a super team friendly contract. Though, surprisingly, the Astros have not done that for Jose Altuve, but the Royals did that for him. And I think if you're a catcher, you kind of have that mindset where you want to be out there. You're in charge of that whole rotation. So I think it's a mindset kind of thing where, you know, he wants to be behind that plate every day. I think they have to tell him to like, step out of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, last year he played 139 games, year before 142, year before 150, year before 138. So it's a big workload, but...
Yeah, and the Royals also have been in the playoffs for, you know, they had those,
exactly
those
right.
2 years where, you know, they win the World Series, Game 7 and Game 5.
Exactly right. So, George, any thoughts there on Sal Perez and, like, his workload? Obviously, he's going to be 27 shortly. He's going to be 27 basically the first month of the season. So not an older player, but a lot of miles for a catcher.
I think the Royals need to be careful here. I think they are overworking him somewhat. I have a funny feeling. This is not all on Ned Yost. I have a funny feeling they've gone to Perez. He keeps saying, no, good, want to play, put me in there, talks his way into the lineup. Now, the manager's thing is you can't let the player always talk you into it. You know, you got to be smart here. You know, sometimes you got to do what's best for the team, not what the player wants here. Listen, there's a reason most teams believe catchers should get one day off a week. And the truth is, I'm with that as well. When I say I don't like it for fantasy purposes. Yeah, I hate when a player takes off. Baseball-wise, though, it does seem to make sense. You know, day game after a night game, which a lot of times happens on a Sunday, it does make sense to give the catcher a day off. So that, yes, I believe it, especially as he's getting up there. He's 27, still young, but I think it behooves Kansas City. You want to keep this guy healthy. You know, so I would give him a day off every now and then, yes.
He does have a backloaded deal here. I just looked up his contract. So he's only playing at 4.2 this year, but it escalates quite rapidly after that, 8.7, 11.2, and then 2 years of 14.2. So they include future salaries of over $50 million. So he's going to get paid. You know, if he was...
Might want to keep him healthy for that.
I was just going to say, at his age 31 season, when he's getting paid $14 million, if he's going to have, I'm just doing the quick math here, nearly another 600 games underneath him. Like, you think he's staying healthy for all that at that position? No way.
Yeah, no, it's demanding mentally, it's demanding physically, but I mean, he's a guy that, like, Yasmani Grandal, Sal Perez, those are catchers that I'm looking at, don't like to pay up, as you mentioned before, so...
Yeah, I feel like Yasmani Grandal is in my future as well. As I go through my drafts, I just feel like he's a guy that I'm going to end up waiting. Because we talk about this every week, I'm going to end up waiting and getting somebody like that. So, all right, George, you took a catcher. Good for you, buddy. You happy about it?
I feel dirty.
You did wait till the 13th round, so we can't really bash you. You waited appropriately. You say you don't like to pay up, and there you did. You put your money where your mouth is. So
I think among the
options, you got a top 10 catcher.
I think among the options that George had there, I think that was the right move.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got lucky in this draft because a lot of people seem to wait on catchers. In the past 15 picks, Realmuto's gone. I mentioned Yasmani Grandal just went to Sussman a little while ago. Mike Florio, by the way, took Realmuto. And Evan Gattis went to Benny Riccardi the pick before that.
Evan Gattis is a guy, like, I had him on my team, I think the last 2 years I had him on my team. And I just, you go through periods of the season where you're just completely frustrated with the guy. But he's got power.
He has power. It's all about the playing time with him this season. He's a 30-run home guy if he gets the at-bats. He was one of my best picks a few years back when he was first coming up, when he was called, Oso Blanco, the white bear or something like that. I took him in the 30 round of my main event team, the NFBC, and that was a very profitable pick.
It sounds like it. So, George, with this team so far, you're 13 picks in. Did you panic anywhere? Are you worried about any of the guys that you've picked up so far? I mean, everybody loves their team when they're going through the draft, and then they take a deep breath after it's over, and they're like, wow, I really didn't. I don't like who I have at first base or whatever it might be. So any misgivings on any of the picks you've made so far? You feel like you reached on anybody?
Well, it's a mock draft, so I'm not panicking.
Okay.
I'm playing this league out.
That's good to know. I don't
panic in most drafts. I mean, listen, by the time draft season goes on, I would have done, I don't know, 50, 100 drafts in mocks, you know, talking about it. So I'm not really all that worried about it. Jose Altuve in round one was fantastic for me. Didn't expect to get someone like that, but I'll take that. And also, that helps me at stolen base. As I mentioned, I will not specifically draft for stolen bases, so I like the fact that I got somebody who sort of helps me out there. After that, I got Noah Syndergaard round two. I've been drafting Noah Syndergaard in the second round in most leagues. I like him to anchor my staff. George Springer around three. Andrew, hate that Springer said yesterday or the day before that he's now only going to steal bases under when it's called for. In other words, to help him win a game, not to steal them recklessly. Good for him, bad for me, bad for anybody who owns him, as he may not even reach 20-25 stolen bases. Took a shot on Andrew McCutchen in round four, value pick there. Carlos Carrasco, who I like. Got Bregman in round after that. Wade Davis is my first closer. I don't draft closers early. There was a little bit of a closer run here. I was at the spot where I wasn't going for 18 more picks, so I went with Wade Davis. Funny that I ended up taking Eric Hosmer, as Matt, Corey, and all of us were arguing. Well, actually, Corey was pretty much arguing against all of us. As far as he doesn't like sabermetrics and advanced stats. Hosmer's just the best first baseman available. Probably missed out there. Addison Russell, shortstop. Michael Fulmer, Miguel Sano, because I need power. Tanner Roark, Salvador Perez. I'm still a little short on power, which is where Duvall comes into play, where I'll probably have to take him next because I only have two outfielders, and I think I need somebody with 30-plus home run potential.
I think Randall Grichuk's a guy I'd be targeting then.
I am, but I get him later.
Yeah, no, I'm saying I understand that. I just, for some reason, I don't know.
You were going to give your thoughts on Duvall earlier. Yeah.
I don't think he's the guy that's going to stick. I think the second half was, you know, you've seen the real Adam Duvall. There's other kids coming up, Jesse Winker and stuff. They're rebuilding. Duvall's the guy that I can see get flipped for something, you know, not even that much.
Yeah, so we got some fantasy notes to go over after the break. It's Matt, Mike, and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We're back, and Matt Modica and I were talking during the break, and he sparked my memory of something that I heard this week, George, flipping the page back over to football. Because we were talking about the mixed bag that we have at quarterback, right? And how some people are probably sitting there saying, like, God, why are we spending so much time talking about Tyrod Taylor and Jay Cutler and Mike Glennon and the whole mixed bag of average quarterbacks outside of Romo that we're talking about? And Jimmy Garoppolo commanding a huge price and Kirk Cousins getting franchise tagged and all that kind of stuff. It is pretty intriguing, right? Because there's so many moving parts. But also on that front, on the rookie side, I heard Bill Polian say something earlier this week, and it was so telling. And he said, the quarterback position in the NFL now has become what the NBA draft has become, where you're ending up taking players that are clearly not developed at the previous level. But what else are you going to do when the Sixers have a guy at LSU drafting Ben Simmons and he ends up being hurt for the whole year? But what are they going to do? He's the most talented player they could possibly evaluate that was available. Is he a complete player? No, but he's super talented and he looks like the guy. Now, the injury is a different issue. They didn't expect that to happen. But conversely, with the football quarterbacks, George, we're talking about Mitch Trubisky, who, listen, you can read every different art. You can read a, as somebody said yesterday, I listened to somebody say, you can talk to five different GMs and get five different opinions on these quarterbacks. It's just true. But from what I'm seeing right now, it looks like Trubisky is in front. He's played 13 games. Somebody's got to take him because they need a quarterback, but they don't know. They don't know. There's nothing to really judge him on. He played 13 games in college. So I thought it was an apt comparison that Polian made about it being like the NBA, where we have to take these undeveloped players and just try and make our best guess.
I've spent the last decade just every time the draft, every season the draft comes on, I love the NFL draft. Every time the third round approaches for the Bills, I'm like, draft a quarterback. Russell Wilson, I was saying draft him. I had no idea he would be as good as he turned out to be. But take a chance. Even Ryan Mallett, I was saying draft Ryan Mallett in the third round. Just take a chance on one of these guys. Dak Prescott again last year. I have no problem with a team taking the best player, especially like Mike just said, these kids aren't ready. Is Jeff Goff ever going to be ready? I'm not sure. He wasn't in the right environment. Hopefully now he's in a better environment. They'll groom him better. They'll get the playmakers for him, the offensive line. But you got to take shots, I think, especially like all these teams you see that haven't had quarterbacks for like a decade, like the Bills.
Yeah. George, thoughts?
So we said it earlier in the show. If you have a quarterback in the NFL, you can compete. If you don't, you can't. So you have to take chances. You don't have a choice in today's NFL. It's a passing league. It's a quarterback-friendly league. It's what the NFL wants. They want 60 points to be put up on the board. It's what sells. You know, SportsCenter eats it up. You know, NFL Live, NFL Prime, all these shows, they want points on the board. So it's just the way it's going. This is why it's so dangerous for Cleveland not to take a quarterback number one overall, unless they have their plan, as I mentioned earlier, with the 16th pick, to trade that pick to New England for Garoppolo. But, you know, even Garoppolo and Glennon, you don't know about them either. They've barely played in the NFL, but they're NFL eyes. They've been in NFL systems. So you would think their growing pain should be less. But nobody knows. These are all educated guesses, some more educated than others. You know, I think Bill Polian's exactly correct. You know, but I think the same is true just about all these guys. Listen, who's the best quarterback that some people think of all time now or in the NFL today? It's Tom Brady. What round did he go in?
Sixth.
Sixth. Dak Prescott went in the fourth round. Everybody passed on him. Dallas passed on him in the fourth round. He was a compensatory pick. A lot of this is just, you know, it's just luck. You know, they end up being in the right system. They change. Also, Dak Prescott seems to have grown up a whole bunch since coming to the NFL, right? Teams passed on him because he had the DWI. Now, all of a sudden, he looks like, you know, his life has changed. He's studying hard. He wants to be great. You know, not everybody wants that. Some people just want to get paid. You know, they make that money. They don't care anymore. They're not going to put the work in. So bottom line is you don't know. Some quarterbacks get drafted into the wrong system, or the coach tries to make their system fit the player rather than the player. You know, the player fit the system rather than the system fit the player.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
You know, and that's generally a mistake.
Yeah, experience isn't the only thing that I'm going to look at, but I tend to be, and I've said this many times, I tend to be somebody that is going to gravitate towards the player that has a lot of experience in college. So you can get a really good look at it. You look back at the 2004 draft. Who are the three guys drafted in the top 11 picks? Eli, Rivers, Ben. All of them had played a ton. Phil Rivers, I think, had started at that point the most games in college football history. He'd started over 40 games. Eli had started 4 years at Ole Miss. Ben left a year early, but he basically started 3 years at Miami University. So ultimately,
I really want to see players with experience. I would prefer them to be coming out of a pro-style offense as well. The spread offense quarterbacks, historically in the NFL, there has not been a hugely successful one yet. So you see guys like Kaepernick, and, you know, in terms of fantasy, it's different. We can't possibly predict the fantasy ramifications of these guys yet. DeShone Kizer, the article I'm looking at right now, has DeShone Kizer number one. They have comparisons with him and Jameis Winston. I actually thought Jameis Winston's best comparison was to Ben Roethlisberger. I see a little bit similar type of game where sneaky athleticism and his ability to extend plays and that kind of stuff. I still think Jameis is promising long term. But they have Kizer compared to him. You know, they have compared to who they've compared Mitch Trubisky to in this article? Alex Smith. How jazzed are you about that? You're taking Alex Smith, knowing what Alex Smith is now, you're taking him in the top 10? I think teams would actually feel pressured to do that.
Just imagine if San Francisco took Aaron Rodgers instead of Alex Smith.
No kidding. But who knows? Like, maybe that would have gotten blown up. It's environment has a lot to do with it. And Packers, honestly, like, maybe they should have cut out a year early on Favre. It'd be, you know, maybe it would have gotten them that much further along, that much quicker. It doesn't matter because Rodgers is pretty much the best quarterback out there. I know the Pats fans don't want to hear it, but he's playing like the best quarterback out there. So, you know what I mean, George? I'm seeing this comparison from Mitch Trubisky to Alex Smith, and then that's the guy that's going to go number one overall. I think we've seen what Alex Smith is. I actually do think he gets bashed a little bit too much. But there's not a very high ceiling there, correct?
Well, listen, Alex Smith, I guess if you're Cleveland, you would love an Alex Smith, right? He's an average
NFL
quarterback. He is what he is.
Yeah.
Game manager. But what are we hearing the noise now? That Kansas City should go out and get Tony Romo, who can bring you to the next level. That Smith has brought you as far as he can bring you. And I agree with that. I think Smith does get knocked too much. There's nothing wrong with being a game manager, depending on what the rest of your team is like.
He does not look downfield, though. That is obviously the huge hole in his game.
That's terrible.
He misses open receivers by bailing and running and taking the safe play. It's great that he doesn't turn it over, but they also, frankly, lost a playoff game against the Steelers because he didn't look downfield.
That Steelers game, he had a couple of criminal guys wide open. Yeah. He didn't make the, you know.
I mean, the fastest player in the league is on his team. Just take a shot.
Yeah, you have to. Especially now, today, you could just throw up the ball. You have these big athletic receivers. You know, the jump up. You know, it's like basketball. Just play jump up. If you've got a guy as good as Odell Beckham, you don't have to throw the best, sharpest pass. Just get it in his area, and he's going to pull it down.
Yeah. You got to throw these guys open and let them make a play. You know, I think back to the Steelers. I'm a Steelers fan, obviously. We're talking about Roethlisberger here a little bit earlier. But, you know, Mike Wallace isn't a terribly polished number one wide receiver. But the Steelers figured out what he did well. And he tore up the league for a year and a half until teams figured it out. And Roethlisberger would get it to him. You know, he wasn't at that time seen to be a massive downfield passer, but they figured it out. And then little did they know, they drafted a guy, by the way, later in the draft in Antonio Brown, that they knew that they had something special. So, I mean, kudos to them for that. But, you know, just take shots down the field. That's all I'm saying with somebody like Alex Smith. So, George, I know we talked about a couple of different things there, but I'll hand it over to you in case you have any comments about Smith or this Tony Romo thing. I mean, do we think that's real? Do you think Andy Reid would bail on Alex Smith at this point and bring in Tony Romo for a season?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with whether Andy Reid wants him or not. I don't think they can fit him under the cap.
Yeah.
You know, Smith's not a free agent. He's making money. They can release Nick Foles, but they have Eric Berry and Dontari Poe. They got to worry about getting those two guys on the contract, and that'll probably eat. To get both would eat whatever else they have. I think the move to CJ, you saw they signed CJ Spiller yesterday. That probably lets you know that Jamal Charles is done.
Yeah.
Because once again, they need to save cap room there, so I think that's a telling move there. So, no, I think it would make a lot of sense there. But, no, I expect Tony Romo to end up in Houston, which I think is the perfect situation. Or Denver would be my second choice.
Yeah, I don't see how Tony Romo doesn't go to either one. I mean, Denver, I know they have Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian. But, I don't think you could waste that defense. It's such, you know, it's such a premium defense.
The windows are too small. The windows are too short in the league to wait around for it. I think Elway saw what he needed to see out of Simeon, and he's made his evaluation already. And that evaluation is either he's our guy or he's out as an option at starting quarterback. And we're going to take some more time with Lynch, bring Romo in for a season, maybe two. You know, and I'm taking the under, by the way. If you're saying two full seasons, I'll take the under. I was talking to Mike Cardano yesterday. If I put the over-under on 16 games for the rest of Tony Romo's career, what would you take?
Probably going to have to go under. But like you said, it's a perfect situation, too, where they can still keep that guy, groom him, and you can play Romo for that year or so. So it's not like, you know, and the other guy, I'm sure there's another team out there that will take whoever they decide to move on from.
Yeah. George, 16 games, and you can include playoff games, 16 games, Tony Romo, rest of his season, rest of his career, over under.
Give me a team he ends up with.
No. That's what's the tough part. You got to figure it out.
Yeah, that's the key there. If it's Denver, I'll take the under because their offensive line is terrible. If it's Houston, I'll take the over. Houston is the perfect team for him. Defense is very good. It's not Denver good, but it's very good. They have a running game, have an offensive line, have the receivers. He wouldn't take as many hits. Denver, he's going to get hit. You know, so that's the problem there. I think Houston is by far the perfect team for Romo. The only setback there, obviously, is Brock Osweiler and the contract situation. But once again, Houston can get out of that contract after next season. You know, it won't kill them cap-wise. If they want Romo, they can figure it out. The only thing with Romo there is, will Jerry Jones be happy about sending him, you know, just a couple of miles south? Is he going to want to do that? That's not perfect for Jerry Jones. He's out of the NFC, and the Cowboys don't play Houston this year. So I think in the end, Jones may go that direction. Because if he lets him go to Denver, Dallas plays Denver this year. He's not going to like that.
We'll take a quick break right here. We'll continue the Tony Romo and quarterbacks discussion after this and the last segment on Roto Experts in the Morning. Back talking about the never-ending QB carousel. George, you made a good point earlier about the Chiefs and...
Just one?
About the Chiefs, you made one very salient point about salary cap issues that they have. They're going to have to release Nick Foles because he's coming in, I think, at a $7 million cap number. Alex Smith, obviously, they have locked in, which is, I can't call it a team-friendly deal. It's less expensive than some other quarterbacks, but there's still a price tag associated with it. They have Dontari Poe and Eric Berry, who are free agents. Eric Berry has declared openly that he will not play under the franchise tag again this season. So do the Chiefs take that chance? I don't think they do. And I think Berry proved that he is a long-term asset for them. Granted, it's a harsh business, but when Eric Berry was ill, right? He had cancer. They weren't sure if he's going to come all the way back to previous form. I think he proved, obviously, that he did. If I'm them, I'm hanging on to Berry. Maybe they feel like Poe is a bigger asset. I do not feel that way. I thought Dontari Poe, who is a very good defensive lineman, I actually thought he was going to take another leap. For fantasy circles, he was actually kind of disappointing. He doesn't make as many plays as he did in previous seasons, but still a very good player from an NFL perspective. In any event, all of those reasons lead me to believe that I think the Romo to Chiefs thing is just internet fodder, frankly. So, and Matt, you were making a point after the break, during the break, about a couple of these things. So.
Well, yeah, I'm not buying that Romo and Jerry Jones, he's not going to go here, he's not going to go there. I mean, the Cowboys will release him because it's going to be favorable for their cap. I do agree with George. Houston's offensive line is the best. They have, they got Lamar Miller, they got the receivers, you got that defense. Broncos, I still think that's a great landing spot for him for that win now. They could still train their quarterback of the future, groom him, and, you know, have that step. But like everybody's saying, what is going to happen? What are the Bills going to do? What if the Bills don't keep Tyrod Taylor? Then that opens up the options for maybe Cleveland. Cleveland takes him in. They don't have to trade their second first-round pick. He's a guy I can see throwing the ball, chucking it up there. Maybe Cleveland decides we're not going to trade our second number two. We'll take a shot in the third or fourth round on a quarterback. Maybe we draft two quarterbacks late or something like that.
Jeez. I mean, anybody could be their quarterback next season. George, do you think RG3 actually starts the season for the Browns next year? Starts opening game week one?
Depends who they get. If it's the, you know, if they go for a rookie, then yes, I think it is him. If they trade for Garoppolo, then no. You know, I think it'll be obviously it'll be Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm not going to, you know, smash RG3 if they're grooming somebody else and they want to bring him along slowly. I don't think that's a bad idea at all. You know, but if they bring in nobody, or, you know, it's a quarterback in the fourth round or whatever it is, and then it's, and then okay, what are we doing here? I mean, I gotta keep making the same mistake over and over and over again. Romo's not going to Cleveland, by the way. You can cross that off your list there. Yeah. That would make no sense for Cleveland. It would make no sense for Romo. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, Cleveland, I know we like to make fun of them. I hope they make the right move here, you know, or at least a smart move. I'll say with this with Cleveland. If you're not going to take a quarterback at first overall, then I think you have to trade that pick. I just don't think you have a choice here because there'll be some team that wants the quarterback, right? I mean, the only way I'm keeping that pick and not taking a quarterback is if I have Garoppolo, if I'm trading my second number one and I'm taking Garoppolo. Then, okay, I'll take the war daddy, that new term that everybody loves here. So then I'll do that with Myles Garrett. That's fine. I have no issues with that. But to keep that number one, not take a quarterback with either one of your first-round picks, what are we doing here? I mean, you're going to have the same problems over and over again. You're not going anywhere in today's NFL without a quarterback. So this has to be addressed this offseason. You let it go when you didn't take Carson Wentz last year. You know, then you put yourself now in this position now. So you have to address. I don't care what Cleveland does, but quarterback has to be addressed.
Matt, the one thing I would say about Cleveland is that they do have a head coach in place that is an offensive coordinator, a guy that has worked closely with quarterbacks and done a nice job with them. So I do like that about a landing spot for a developmental QB.
Yeah, I think Hugh Jackson's great. I wish the Bills would have hired him. And the Bills, for some reason, hired another defensive coordinator in the age of offense in the NFL. Rex Ryan was a horrible hire. But yes, what I think the Browns should do is, if they can get the right price, trade that number one pick, slide down, get, if they can get, you know, they need a lot of help. And if they can just keep building and building, and then they can take shots on, you know, third round quarterback or maybe somebody in the early second, if that's what they've evaluated, like you said. They have a coach in place who's a good offensive coordinator, a coach I would have liked to have run my team, but I think they need a lot of help.
They took 14 picks last year, and they can't do that again. I mean, you're going to turn over 28 players in 2 years. I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't get some more picks. I am of the mindset that if they really like Garrett and they think he's a game-changing defensive end, I would stay there and take him. Yes, they're going to run the risk of that number 12 pick maybe not having a quarterback there. Mm-hmm. That is the risk, but you'd have to decide at some point. You could trade back up a few picks if they really love mm-hmm. one of the three.
I just think they should have other options. They're just, it's been a black hole of a franchise for now for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like to see all the teams become competitive. You don't want to just see the same. I mean, the Patriot thing has gotten really old.
Yeah. George, thoughts?
You can't win without a quarterback. That has to be addressed at some point. I don't care how they address it. First pick, 16th pick for Garoppolo, signing a free agent quarterback, you know, trading for Glennon. Don't care how, but you can't go another season with RG3, you know, Kessler, I think McCown's already been released. So you can't go another season like that. Take Brian Sipe, bring him out of retirement, go get Bernie Kosar. I don't care. It has to be addressed.
Vinny Testaverde, always an option. Tim Couch, I don't think he's going
to
come back.
Went to high school with his sister.
There you go. So maybe you can recommend, based on those connections, recommend Testaverde to the Browns. In any event,
just
that's
the deal,
folks. So, you know, you see other names on that list of guys coming out. Davis Webb from Cal and Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech. No, thank you. I'm out. I'm out on any Texas Tech QB. It's not a pro-style offense, and I'm not waiting to the mid-rounds to take a guy that is unlikely to be successful. If you want to talk Graham Harrell and Case Keenum and all these other guys that were shootout type of quarterbacks in the Big 12 and other conferences, I'm out on those guys. So that's it, folks. 3 hours up, 3 hours down. Got the weekend fantasy update coming up with the Fantasy Jesus, Joe Galina, Frank Stanfall. Here's Mike Florio coming in studio. Those guys will be with you for the next couple of hours, and then Fantasy Basketball Weekly after that. Matt, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You'll be here next week, Saturday from 8 to 10. George and I will be here tomorrow from 7 to 10, and we'll talk about God knows what. We could spend another 3 hours on the quarterback carousel where nobody likes any of the quarterbacks, but I'll think of something more interesting than that. Thank you to Pete Considori. Weekend Fantasy Update is next. Thanks, folks. Thanks for listening. Have a good Saturday.